You're listening to another edition of the As Yet Unnamed Let Me Be Frank College Sports Podcast. Be Frank and Be Fox. I am the latter. We are going to start off talking about the week one in college football that was very hyped coming into it and really, for the most part, lived up to the hype.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun to watch. So many good games all weekend. Saturday, I felt like I never got off the couch because there was no reason to.
Yeah, Saturday was not the day to have anything pressing to do because there was just, you're right, no break in the action. And I think probably the biggest upset, or at least kind of unexpected results that really caught my attention, I was kind of doing a little TV1, TV2 action with this game, but that was LSU-Wisconsin. And for all the talk we heard preseason from guys like, I don't know if you listened to PMT when Phil Steele was on there talking about how much better LSU's quarterback play was going to be, still the same old problems. Their offense has tons of question marks.
It's always astounding to see how bad LSU quarterbacks can be, and I think they one-up each other each and every year. And Brandon Harris made some of the worst decisions I've ever seen.
Yeah, and especially in the really the last play of the game, really an ill-advised throw that Wisconsin picked off, kind of put an exclamation point on what was a very frustrating day. And you can say that Wisconsin was not really, you know, that impressive themselves, though certainly the polls disagree. We can get into that later. But the fact that they were not up by much more the first half, given how much Leonard Fournette struggled, I mean, this was just kind of a slosh fest between both offenses. And I don't know. I think it says more about LSU being not as good as we thought than Wisconsin being much, much better than we thought. I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, I'll go the exact same way with you. I think LSU's defense is really good. I think they played a really good game. Wisconsin doesn't have that many playmakers on offense, which I think we all knew coming in, and Bart Houston played bad enough to win, but because Brandon Harris played even worse. The running game on each team was slow to get going. Wisconsin got theirs going faster, and they ended up winning the game. The interception was just one of the worst throws I've ever seen. There was no one, I mean no one, even close to that ball. He threw it directly at the defender.
Yeah, there's just no reason for any defense right now to anticipate that LSU is going to hurt you in the passing game. Like, LSU still has a lot of weapons at receivers, just freak athletes, as you know we're typically used to seeing, but you're really not going to see much of that this year. I mean, those guys are probably going to top out around maybe 40, 45 receptions, and not a lot of big plays for the most part until, you know, Brandon Harris can really establish himself as a threat, because I mean, he's not. Wisconsin's whole game plan was predicated on stopping Fournette, which they executed to a T, especially in the first half, and what got them that initial cushion. And I mean, I would expect that's how pretty much every team's going to play LSU this year. Just cheat especially hard towards the run, and then, you know, be surprised by anything positive that Brandon Harris is able to throw at them.
Yeah, definitely. I think this weekend proved especially that you have to have a scoring offense, a real churning offense to win games in college football. Most of the big games were in the 30s, 40s, and some in the 50s. So while defense is always good to have, and LSU has a really good one, they still need to prove that they can score between 25, 30 points a game, and they obviously don't seem to have that capability yet. And Without Harris really proving anything, you can stack the box against them and make him try and beat you.
Yeah, and I think that's the fun thing about college football, because, I mean, pretty much always it's more fun to watch great offense than great defense. And having all these games this weekend, you know, in the 30s and 40s, even, you know, some double overtime games, getting into the 50s. But it was a lot of fun. This one, LSU-Wisconsin really stood out for being in the opposite direction. Of course, the first few weekends, typically a little higher scoring just because of all the mismatches going around. But you really saw, even in the games when teams were kind of more evenly matched, both offenses were putting up a ton of points. And then I think one of the ones that really surprised me when that happened was the, I don't know if you got a chance to watch Bama USC, but that was just, I thought Bama just looked so terrible for about the first quarter and a half or so. And then as soon as, I forget the player's name, the USC guy just stomped all over the nether regions of a fallen Alabama player. Everything changed so quickly, and Alabama became Alabama again.
Yeah, the groin stomp really, it was almost like a kick to Bama's balls to realize, like, oh, okay, we're the number one team in the country. We're way better than this. And then it was over from there. Jalen Hurts looked really good. I was surprised by that. And, I mean, their defense is just unbelievable again. So it's not going to be fun to watch Bama roll through teams again. But I think they'll have a couple tough games in the SEC, but they look to be well on their way back to the playoff.
Yeah, there were a few fleeting moments for me where I thought, you know, maybe we're just kind of exalting Bama just based on pedigree. Maybe they don't have the talent necessarily this season. Because, you know, USC was getting whatever they wanted early, though not necessarily the points to show for it. And then Alabama was switching quarterbacks. Hurts came in, pretty much loses a fumble right on the first play.
Yep.
And it's a lot more, you know, kind of anxiety and lack of discipline than you're used to seeing from a Nick Saban team. But, I mean, really after that point, just total domination. And, you know, it's especially sweet for a guy like Lane Kiffin, who has his own personal vendetta against USC to begin with, but also just the way that offense was able to just shred through what is, I still think, going to be a pretty good team in USC.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin was definitely excited to win that one so big. I loved watching it just because I don't like USC. And I think the other game on at that time was the Clemson game, Clemson-Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I had TV1, TV2 going for that, but I was still switching back to watch the Bama beatdown just because it's so much fun to see USC get stomped on. But, I mean, USC, they'll play with some teams. They'll compete in the Pac-12. I don't think they'll be as good as I thought they would at the beginning of the year, a.k.a. last week when we recorded the first show. But I mean, they'll get it together. That was just all around collapse, offensively, defensively, special teams. They just couldn't do anything right, and Alabama did everything. So I think give them a few weeks, they'll bounce back, and they'll be competing again in the Pac-12.
I think that's a really tough first game to just throw Max Brown out there at quarterback. You're like, here's Alabama, always going to have one of the top two, three defenses in the country. Good luck. I mean, he looked fine to start, but I think at a certain point, the moment became a little too big. And, you know, once the floodgates opened, it was a lot tougher for really anything to get going for USC offensively. I mean, this isn't a huge stretch to say that's going to be the best defense they play all year. And I think, especially in the Pac-12, there's some good defenses in there, certainly, but I mean, not to the level of Alabama. So I think his season will be obviously much, much better than it looked through an extremely small sample size. But I think it would be very easy for USC fans to panic. I don't know how many are listening to this, but I think it's easy to look at this result and kind of think the season's going to be a waste. But I think a lot of that is just can be attributed to how good Alabama is once again.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's a really tough thing to throw a kid into to play Alabama, who's going to have between 7 and 10 NFL draft picks on their defense, and playing in Arlington at Jerry World in front of 110,000 people. I mean, this week we've seen a ton of young quarterbacks start off, and some sank and some swam. You know, it's interesting to see who does what and how well they play in certain situations, but it's a really tough spot to put him in. He'll definitely bounce back in these coming weeks. He showed a couple bright spots. And it's just, you got to keep getting repetition, keep playing some games, and he'll get better as the season goes on for sure.
Yeah, I think you mentioned a lot of new quarterbacks, some freshmen, some just replacing longtime starters, some transfers that were getting their first shot. And I'm going to use that awesome segue to talk a little bit about A&M against UCLA. Trevor Knight, graduate transfer from Oklahoma, first start at home against UCLA, a team that many very, very smart college football experts pick to be in the playoff. And, you know, I was very impressed by A&M getting the win over UCLA, and it was a huge win for Kevin Sumlin.
Yeah, I was surprised, to say the least, that A&M got off to such a great start like they did. Rosen did not look very good. Part of it was his poor decision-making, and part of it was just mixed pressure from the A&M defense. They brought it to him all day, and they really made him work for any plays he made. I thought that they were going to blow the game once UCLA came back, and I thought it was over, and I thought Kevin Sumlin was going to get fired come Sunday. I thought that was it. I was telling my dad, like, this is it. He blows this lead after the year they had last year. He's done. Like, just get his resume ready, because he's out of there. But that was a hell of a comeback. Trevor Knight can still play. I don't know. He wasn't too great at Oklahoma, but I think he showed how good he can be again. And their running game was a lot better than I expected. They were tearing through the defense of UCLA at points.
Yeah, and like you said, Rosen's decision-making really kind of dug them into a hole. You know, there's one especially egregious interception where he really should have just eaten it, but I really don't know what he was trying to do, and then it got picked off, and that was kind of the first half, and really first two and a half, three quarters in a microcosm for USC, or UCLA, as they really fell behind. But, I mean, A&M is, I don't know. A&M is the type of team I hate to draw conclusions about after 1 week, just because based on the last, you know, 2 to 3 years where they've looked very good in the first couple weeks of the season, and then just SEC play rolls around, or, you know, the real meat of the SEC schedule rolls around, and, you know, it just all goes to hell. But, I mean, I think this is – without looking at their schedule, I think this is as good a non-conference win as they've had in quite a few years. And that, you know, certainly bodes well for them and some stability at the quarterback position that finally looks like they have is going to do wonders rather than all the drama they had last year. And for UCLA, now the pressure's really on. Could not really afford an early slip up for, you know, their playoff hopes, but it happened. So now it's going to be a long, hard climb to even think about getting back into that conversation.
Yeah, I think the good thing for UCLA is they're a young team, so they can forget about it quickly. Also, Washington is getting hugely overrated right now. So if they can beat Washington, that'd be really good for them. Obviously, it's a resume boosting win. But in overtime, I thought it was strange how often UCLA ran the ball. It was almost like Jim Mora was trying to take the ball out of Rosen's hands because he just didn't want him to make another poor play or poor decision.
Right. Yeah, you said it exactly. Like, he was trying to take the ball out of his hands. And, I mean, I kind of understand to an extent, just because of the mistakes he had made, the fact that, you know, his decision-making was really rough around the edges. But at the same time, you know, he's far and away your best player. And, I mean, Paul Perkins is in the NFL now. There's really no reason to just kind of throw all of your resources into the running game when you have a guy as talented as Rosen back there, even if he's having, you know, that rough of the game. Because at the end of the day, it wasn't a complete disaster. You know, he still recovered nicely, I thought. And put up a respectful stat line. It's not like he was struggling through like a horrific 5-interception day or anything like that. So I thought that was a little little too conservative. I was also a little confused by that.
Yeah, I mean, he played a really decent fourth quarter. He had a couple nice drives to get them the lead, I think, or tie it up. I can't remember which it was. But you want to take the ball out of his hands so he doesn't make poor decisions, but you're putting him then in high-pressure situations where you've got 3rd and 8, 4th and 8 in overtime to win the game. So it's kind of a double-edged sword there. I felt they should have thrown it early downs and then run a couple shorter routes or run the ball on 2nd or 3rd down just to pick up some yards instead of forcing him into two handoff plays and then 3rd and 8 or 4th and 6 or something and forcing him to have to make a play then.
Right. You're essentially saying we don't trust you, but every time that you're going to have the ball in your hands, it's going to be an extremely pressure-packed situation, which
right.
is not going to really help his growth at all.
Not at all. All right. Moving to Georgia, North Carolina. That was a game I thought was going to be higher scoring, believe it or not, and
really
just way more explosive plays just because I didn't know too much about North Carolina coming into the year, and I've never really been a believer in their team or defense in that case. They've always had a good offense when they've had good teams, and then Georgia, new coach, big game in the Georgia Dome, felt like it was going to be so much adrenaline and not enough focus, and Nick Chubb just took over for their offense.
Yeah, I mean, with all of the hype about some of the biggest Heisman contenders, you almost kind of forget that Nick Chubb is still grinding away playing football at Georgia. Georgia's had just an incredible run of talented running backs who admittedly have struggled to stay healthy, which has kind of limited Georgia's overall success. But Nick Chubb is one of the most talented backs in the country. And this year, more than any, that's especially a huge compliment. I mean, look at the other guys who are up there. And I know a lot of people, myself included, were a little skeptical on kind of how Kirby Smart's first year at Georgia would go, whether there would be some sort of transition period, what to expect from this team, whether to expect this team to even challenge in the East. And I know I'm doing exactly the thing I said I hate about reactions from just one game, but considering it is the SEC East, I definitely think that Georgia has a very good chance to win it, especially seeing how Tennessee struggled in their opener. I mean, that division's still wide open, and Georgia has as good a chance as anyone to take that title.
Yeah, if Eason can play as well as he did and Nick Chubb can do half of that and stay healthy, because I think he had like 32 carries or something, which is insane because he's coming off a knee injury, but right. He was an absolute workhorse. But Elijah Hood played really well for North Carolina too. I was impressed with him. He is also a fairly large running back, but he is fast, man. Once he gets in that open space, he explodes.
Yeah, North Carolina is another team I really didn't know too much about coming into this one. And I did watch most of this game with the sound off because I was in a bar and it was just like tiny TV3 in a corner. But it was an awesome game, so I kept checking it out. But North Carolina looks like a very talented team as well. And you throw them in there with Louisville and, of course, the two teams at the top. And the ACC becomes a lot better looking than it did, to me just a week ago, which can partially be attributed to me not knowing as much about those other teams, but also pretty strong showings in week one. Even though North Carolina, didn't get the W, I think they still have, just as much talent as they did last year when they went to the ACC championship game. And, it's possible that it's certainly possible that they could replicate that.
Yeah, speaking of the ACC, we got to go to the Ole Miss Florida State game. That was a tough one.
Rough
all
one.
Around. I'm not a Florida State fan. Not really an Ole Miss guy, but I like Chad Kelly, and boy, did he melt down in the second half. 3 touchdowns and an interception in the first half, and I believe he had 2 or 3 interceptions in the second half, including a horribly underthrown ball to lose the game. Francois looked really good in the second half. Probably the best I've seen a freshman quarterback look since Jameis Winston. And I don't think that's a coincidence. He was 33 of 52 for 400 plus yards, and Dalvin Cook didn't even play that good a game, and they still won. So Florida State looks very dangerous right now.
Yeah, you shouldn't be able to just keep trotting in, you know, whether they're freshmen or redshirt freshmen, quarterbacks, and just have them just be this good right out of the gate. You remember what Jameis did? I believe it was also a Monday night game, his first game. So you had the entire national spotlight on himself. Francois, much the same way. And kind of same old story for Ole Miss, jumping out to a huge lead in a big game and then just not being able to seal the deal. And you're right. Florida State's, we already knew Florida State was talented. The big question mark in my mind was the quarterback position. And, you know, after the way Francois shredded this SEC defense, they're going to be a tough out for really any team in the country.
Yeah, again, I'm just incredibly impressed with Francois. Can Les Miles take some notes from Jimbo Fisher on how to recruit a damn quarterback? It's unbelievable, the disparity between the two teams.
Yeah, it's going back to beat this dead horse a little more. It's not like LSU is in a talentless region of the country. Like, there should be ample opportunities for them to get a quarterback. But, I mean, just the way that Florida State is able to not only recruit these guys, but have them come in right away. You know, after taking a year to kind of adjust to, you know, how much more athletic players are in college than, you know, redshirt freshmen, both Winston and Francois just come out right away and play amazingly well. And I think this is more a case of, you know, Francois being extremely talented rather than, you know, the Kenny Trill debut. Because I think Ole Miss is actually a good football team, and he did not make their defense look like one, you know, after Ole Miss got out to that big lead.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go to my game of the week before the week, which was Houston, Oklahoma, and I am so excited to have absolutely nailed that one. Oklahoma looked terrible. So many penalties. Poor defensive coverage. Greg Ward shredded him. He wasn't that great either. He was pretty inconsistent passing, but he was huge on third down. I think he converted something like 7 in a row and just absolutely demoralized that defense. And then that field goal return pretty much sealed the game for him. Unbelievable. It was I can't believe how close his foot was to the end line, but that was that was a really good game. I was really impressed with Houston. I didn't think they'd have the defense. Like I said last week, I thought it was going to be in the upper 40s or even 50s scores-wise, and they held Oklahoma to like 23 points, I think.
Yeah, it was 23 points. And fortunately, I did wake up for this game. That was a concern. But Houston never really looked like the moment was too big for them, and You're right. That kick six was amazing. All kick sixes are amazing. Like, there's not really a play like it. Just how quickly the tide of the game can change on that single play. That's huge for Houston because, I mean, really they have a pretty clear shot to making the playoff if they win out without, you know, this is a huge knock on wood, but if they can do so, you know, in whatever constitutes convincing enough fashion, which is never a clear, you know, thing to understand. But this was the biggest game on their schedule. They played like they had prepared all offseason, like it was the biggest game on their schedule, really taking the momentum from their huge season last year and that huge bowl win and, you know, just picking up right where they left off.
Yeah, I mean, they still have Louisville on November 17th, but it's at home. So that's definitely an easier game for them, I'd say. I don't think Louisville's as talented as Oklahoma, nor do I think or I think they're playing at home, so it'll be an easier one. But it's all about what convincing is, like you said, and how the rest of the conferences shape out. If most of the conferences lose a couple games or they beat up on each other, which I think the SEC will do this year, I think there's going to be cannibalization there. The ACC it's going to be Clemson or Florida State, and whoever wins that is going to be the playoff team from there. And then the Big Ten will have one, I think. So Houston could sneak in so long as they don't slip up against Louisville. But what do you think this does in terms of Big 12 expansion? Because I know we briefly talked about it last week, but how, if you're the Big 12, how are you not chomping at the bit to get this team in your conference? And especially because if you get them there, Herman's going to stay.
Right, and I think that was really the big draw of adding TCU to the Big 12 was how strong their football team was. And, you know, Houston, much the same way. Their stock is never going to be higher. Tom Herman's stock is never going to be higher. So if you were to, add Houston to the conference, you better do it while he's still there, because he's already proven, of course, that he's a tremendous coach just coming into what you would consider kind of a mid-major, just because it's not the Power Five conference, and having that level of immediate success is really impressive. And yeah, if they're going to add them, which I don't see another team that would, you know, be higher on their wish list, you'd have to do it before some bigger conference school scoops up Herman for just a boatload of cash.
Right, right. I think that's the biggest takeaway from this game, the long-term outlook, and I think they punched their ticket into the Big 12. It's going to be the question of who the other team is and if the timing works out to keep Tom Herman in town. But going on to another Texas team, unfortunately, probably the game of the weekend. Texas beats Notre Dame in double overtime. We're both ND guys, so this one hurts a little, but that was a hell of a game. And the biggest question was answered, and that was how would Notre Dame's defense react to the dismissal of a couple players, including Max Redfield, and it was not good. They did not look very good at all. Freshman quarterback, can't remember his first name, but Bouchel was his last name.
Shane
Bouchel, yeah. He played really well. The running game torched the Irish defense. But Deshaun Kizer was also fantastic for Notre Dame, which is a promising sign because – it looks like Brian Kelly's chosen his quarterback now.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me was not only how improved Texas looked, which obviously is first and foremost, but secondly, I thought Notre Dame was able to lose without looking bad in the process of doing so, which I know is a really vague thing to say, because the defense did absolutely get shredded, but it seemed to me there's a lot of improvements on that side of the ball. For Texas, really the two quarterback system of Vishal and Swoops was used very well. And of course, on the other side, Kizer, six total touchdowns, really putting to bed the quarterback controversy, which, you know, of course, is very unfortunate for Malik Zaire. Kind of got a feel for him a little bit, getting injured and, you know, ending up losing his job after the fine year Kizer had last year and then the game last week, Texas. But I mean, going forward, Texas now, we were kind of wondering if they could challenge in the Big 12, if they can build off this. You know, you would certainly think so. On the other end of the spectrum, we kind of looked at this is one of the few road games for Notre Dame. They don't have too many challenging games on their schedule, so not being able to win this road game, you think, really, really hurts them.
Yeah, this might have done it for Notre Dame. I don't know if they'll be able to make the playoff. They'd have to really win convincingly in pretty much every single game from here on out. And I don't know if their defense can hold teams to low enough point totals where the offense can outscore anyone that much. I mean, we saw that the offense is explosive and they have the ability to put up big numbers, but the defense still is going to be a huge question mark week to week. And we'll just have to wait and see what happens with Nevada, but hats off to Charlie Strong, because that's a hell of a win for him and the team. And now they're number 11, because that's what the media does.
Yeah, and you hope for his sake that this time, after he crowd surfed after a big victory, the team actually continues to play well, and it's not like last year after Oklahoma, where they still finished 5-7. But I mean, I really have no reason to think that there would be a massive drop off after this game, unless I'm just completely overvaluing how good Notre Dame is because I'm a homer, which I don't think I am that much. But it's always a possibility. But I think the biggest thing for me is how improved Texas was just over last year.
Yeah, no, I was really impressed with Texas. I didn't know what to expect, like you said. We were both kind of on the fence thinking, you know, if they play like they did last year, it's going to be another long year and Charlie Strong's going to be done. But if they can stick in it or even win the game, then they could be a legitimate Big 12 contender. And I think the way they played, they can beat just about anyone in the Big 12. TCU struggled with South Dakota State. Oklahoma lost to Houston. There were West Virginia beat Mizzou, but Mizzou looked terrible. There weren't too many other like impressive Big 12 teams outside of Texas last week.
Kansas won.
Yeah, and stormed the field.
Like 15 people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Penn huge State win. After a basketball win.
Yeah, huge win for them. I had a couple other scores I just wanted to talk about real quick. UConn, who is a potential Big 12 expansion school, needed a fourth quarter comeback to beat FCS Maine. They were down 21-14 and won 24-21. We touched on it earlier. Tennessee beat App State in overtime, and really just poor clock management down the stretch by Appalachian State. And they could have and should have won. I think it was like 7 or 9 years to the date they beat Michigan at the Big House, which is still one of my favorite college football games ever.
Yeah.
South Alabama beat Mississippi State, which was unreal. Mississippi State missed like a 26-yard field goal to lose.
That shot, though, from behind the kicker where you just see all of the Mississippi State fans, he clanks it, and then everyone just reacts like they got shot.
Yep, just it was like unbelievable.
The level of passion for football in the South in like 1 5-second clip was unreal.
It was too good. Western Michigan beats our Northwestern Wildcats 22-21. Rob Spillane with the game-winning strip. And then Lovey Smith is 1-0, 52-3 over Murray State. So I was a little off on that one. Didn't get every pick right last week.
But, hey, you know what? You also nailed Southern Miss beat Kentucky, which was a game I was essentially watching on, like, TV 4 or 5. And Kentucky looked like the best team in, like, well, at that point, yeah, the best team in the SEC East just because how terrible everyone else looked. Just athletes making plays all over. But Southern Miss came back.
The boys heard. They heard what I called, and they made it happen. I think they scored like 27 straight points or something to put it away.
Yeah, it was Florida State Ole Miss, but on like a much, 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 much less prestigious scale.
Of course.
Essentially.
So we've alluded to it a few times, but I want to talk about the AP poll real quick. Wisconsin is number 10 after beating LSU, going from unranked. Texas is number 11 after beating Notre Dame, going from unranked. Washington is number 8 now. Houston 6, which I don't think is overrating them too much. And there was one more team that I was just shocked at. It would be Tennessee only dropped 8 spots after beating App State by 7 in overtime. I thought they would drop a little more, but wow, is this reactionary to put Texas and Wisconsin up there.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised, actually, that Tennessee dropped as much as they did, because typically I haven't seen too much of SEC teams getting close wins and then having huge falls like that. I mean, it's the appropriate thing. It's what should have happened. They looked terrible in that game, and really they deserved to lose. I'm a little surprised that they were actually punished for it, which I guess is progress. But on the other end of the spectrum, like you said, Wisconsin has no business being a top 10 team. I'm sorry. they beat a top 10 team last week, but again, I think that had more to do with LSU being, you know, not so great and suffering the same problems they have year after year than Wisconsin being, you know, world beaters. But I mean, we'll obviously see all this over the course of the season, but it seems like a huge leap to make after just one game. Same with Texas. I'm hoping for Texas's sake and for the sake of the Big 12 that they are, you know, actually a top 20 team, and they're extremely competitive in the title race, but I don't really see how you can put them all the way up to number 11 after just one game.
Yeah, I think just the math of it doesn't make sense to me. You beat number 10, so now you're number 11. Like, there were other ranked teams that won games. I mean, Michigan State is 12, and they did not look very good against Furman, so that's understandable that they'd stay the same. Louisville dropped, like, 77 on –
Yeah, they're up 56-0 at halftime.
Yeah, so I don't know how they don't move up a little more, especially when you're going to value Tennessee's win so low or devalue Tennessee because of that bad win. But, I mean, it's like we said, it's early, so people are going to be reactionary and go over the top. But I think another tough thing for me to grasp is that one person had Michigan at number one. They received a first-place vote.
Oh, yeah. I don't know all the different writers who vote in the AP Top 25, so that's not as easy to guess for me as if it was just one solitary person in the coaches poll. I don't know. That's interesting.
I don't know if you can see the football polls, but the basketball ones, you can always see each person how they voted. So you can always see like how crazy Dick Vitale is when he makes his picks.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think there is – actually, I don't know if they have that for football. I know there's one guy in the Sun-Times that used to just publish his poll every week, but that might have just been like by choice. I don't know. They probably don't make that publicly available now that I think about it, because I definitely would have looked for it in the past. I don't know. They should.
Yeah, I know some writers.
Get some accountability.
Yeah, exactly. We need to figure out who these people are. Week two, for as great as week one was, week two is miserable. I struggled to figure out any real good games. I think Arkansas-TCU is probably the best game on the slate, and Kenny Hill looked really good for TCU. I didn't get to watch any of the game, but his numbers were unbelievable. I saw some highlights. The real question is, how is their defense going to respond after giving up 41 points to South Dakota State?
Yeah, I mean, if it was North Dakota State, you would almost be able to understand that, but I really don't know kind of how that happens for a team that has so often prided themselves on defense. I know last year it was kind of a wash because there were so many injuries to that defense, and Trevon Boykin and Josh Doxson kind of carried the load and still made that team, you know, one of the better ones in the country. But yeah, that's giving up 41 to South Dakota State, very hard to explain away. So it'll be very important to see, or it'll be very important how well they are able to bounce back in week two. Because, I mean, they better hope that this is more just a blip than what's going to be the norm for the season. Because much better teams than South Dakota State, in that case, would have no trouble just running roughshod all over TCU.
Yeah, I'd love to be able to see what Baker Mayfield could do against that defense if that's the best they're going to play all year.
Yeah, I don't know. You hope for Gary Patterson's sake that it'll be a little better, but I don't know. I can't pretend like I watched any of that game.
So. Yeah, I couldn't even find it on TV, but I just saw the score and watched some highlights. Iowa State heads to Iowa. Iowa State's coming off a loss to Northern Iowa, who is Division I AA. Nice. I don't see the Hawkeyes having any trouble with this one. It'd be a cruise win for them over a rival. There's not really much else to say if you want to add anything. Otherwise, I'll move on to another game.
Not really. Just Iowa looked very good against J.Crew U last week, which
yes, they did.
Isn't really saying too much considering the opponent, but I mean, so far so good. So I also wouldn't really expect too much from this game in terms of competitiveness, unless you want to do the whole, oh, it's a rivalry game, you got to throw the records out the window. We're one game into the season. I think it'll be fine, but I'd expect Iowa to have no trouble in this game.
North Carolina heads to Illinois to take on the Fighting Illini.
Big game.
Lovey's defense looked good against a bad Murray State team, but I think Elijah Hood and company are going to shred the Illini to the tune of a 28-point win. Hopefully, for the Big Ten's sake, Illinois is better. They're improved, but I just don't see it happening in 1 year with Lovey after one game.
How badly did they lose last year? Is it about 30-35-point loss?
Yeah, I believe so.
I think it won't be that bad, but I also would not really expect Illinois to win. I mean, just I'm sure there are lots of nice people that play football for Murray State, but I think this is going to be a massive step up in competition. It would certainly be awesome if Illinois is greatly improved right away under Lovey. It would certainly make the conference more fun. It would certainly be fun to see him be successful and find joy in the sport of football again. But I mean, I still think that North Carolina is going to be a contender in their division in the ACC. So I think it could get ugly, but it won't be as bad as last year.
Yeah, I agree completely with you. Another game that I just realized, Cal heads to San Diego State. San Diego State's a team that actually has a chance to run the table if they beat Cal. They really don't have that great a schedule. And if they can win by enough and there are enough losses ahead of them, they could get in that top 15 range where we have to start talking about them. So I wasn't able to watch either Cal or neither Cal nor South Dakota or San Diego. I keep saying South Dakota. Wow. They're all over my they're in my head. But wasn't able to watch San Diego State's game. You got to think that Cal's going to win this one straight because of the pedigree of the Pac-12. And Cal's typically a decent team, and I'd expect better than San Diego State. But it's one I'm going to keep an eye on this weekend.
I mean, I don't know a ton about San Diego State. I did do some reading in the preseason, said, you know, they might be a team that kind of is able to sneak their way to a 12-0 record, and then, you know, what if that were the case. I will say I watched Cal play against Hawaii and their defense looked atrocious. Their offense looked fine, but I mean Hawaii sucks. So not really buying too much into that. But I mean their defense looked very bad. So you know it wouldn't be too shocking if San Diego State were able to win, just though I confess to know little to nothing about their team. You know, Cal isn't exactly, you know, that great of a football team.
So yeah, I agree with you there. My upset pick this week is BYU at Utah. I watched a little bit of the BYU-Arizona game, and I thought they looked pretty good. Their running back especially, I think Daniels is his last name. He had like 22 carries for 150 yards. He looked really good. Arizona's not that great. Rich Rod is struggling in Arizona right now. But BYU is always a competitive team, and I think a win on the road at Utah will do them some wonders, especially they're also trying to get into the Big 12, I believe.
I mean, I don't really have an upset pick this week. I'd honestly have to look at some spreads because just going down the list of top 25 teams and who they were playing, got all the good games out of the way in week one, it seems like.
There's
nothing
for
sure that really jumps out to me. I certainly hope that there are some games that turn out to be a lot closer than expected. I hope some underdogs win. I'm sure they will just because that normally happens. But Yeah, nothing really jumps out at you. It seems like a lot of teams played their high profile matchup week one, and then week two kind of playing, you know, an FCS or very low level FBS team.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure week three the good games come back. I think Notre Dame plays Michigan State week three, which will be a good one. And I'm sure there are others. I think yeah. the SEC starts playing games and the ACC starts playing games. So we should
Ohio
get some
State
good games.
Oklahoma, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be a real good one. And then I have a spread pick just because I like betting and people also like gambling. But Navy at home is only favored by 3.5 over UConn, who I previously mentioned barely beat Maine. So I think that's a lock. I love Navy. First, I'm always a big Navy guy, and playing at home, you can't really bet against the Naval Academy.
You really can't. I'm frantically trying to go to my go-to site for acquiring such information to see if there's anything I could possibly throw at you as a spread pick. I'm hoping I can, just from my weekly Indiana football shout out.
They're 1-0, man.
They're 1-0. They're playing Ball State this week, and they have not beaten Ball State since 2011, which is about 1,000 more days than it's been since the last time that Kentucky basketball beat Indiana. Something that was pointed out in the Crimson Quarry group chat today, which made us all super depressed. I don't know. I need to remember what time the game's being played at so I can find the spread. Oh, here we go. Oh, okay. Indiana favored by 17.5. Maybe not that game. But I guess the point is I don't have a spread pick this week. Just watch football and just be like Darren Revelle watching March Madness. Just root for madness. Just chaos all across the board.
Yeah, I think
this will be enjoyable for you.
Yeah, there are some good small teams playing some bigger ones. Youngstown State plays West Virginia, and they've got arguably the biggest football guy as their coach in Bo Pelini.
And Jim Tressel on the administration.
Yeah, he's the president of the school. That's unbelievable. But yeah, so there's week two. Unfortunately, not as great for you guys as week one, but week three, we will be back